From Comedy Central's World News Headquarters in New York, this is The Daily Show with Jon Stewart.
Probably no other satirical venue has had more influence on the way Americans today think about news and the news media than The Daily Show with Jon Stewart. Part of its genius and of its spawn, the Colbert Report, is how it brilliantly rides that very fine and very blurry line between comedy and reality. Especially in 2009, when the show aired segments produced in Tehran at the time of the rigged Iranian election and resulting protests. One of those stories featured the Iranian-Canadian journalist Mazyar Bahari.
You know, you say death to America, the other part says that axis of evil. So, and both sides are idiots, basically.
Wait, did he just call us all idiots?
Right after the segment aired, Bahari was arrested for colluding with American spies, that is, The Daily Show guys, and being a spy himself. He was hailed, interrogated, beaten, and threatened with death for 4 months until an international campaign led to his release. Bahari wrote a book about his experience, and now he and Jon Stewart have turned that book into a movie, Rosewater, which comes out this weekend. Stewart wrote and directed the film, which stars Gael Garcia Bernal as Bahari.
You are a spy.
No. The American government doesn't control Newsweek magazine. And to be honest, it's not even worth controlling anymore.
Is it?
Yes. This weekly model of magazine is completely outdated.
Outdated?
There are better ways of doing propaganda. Through the internet, blogs, Twitter.
I'll be paranoid.
You're not paranoid? I didn't say that.
Paranoid! Paranoid.
I sat down to talk with Jon Stewart, not far from his apartment.
Very, very good movie.
Oh, thank you.
And I'm an emotionless Nebraskan, but I choked up. I did.
That is how it should be judged.
Yeah.
You gave it two Nebraskas.
He says that back in 2009, the news reports of Bahari's capture didn't make him and his colleagues feel guilty exactly. Thousands of Iranians had been arrested, but it did rattle them.
Our real dilemma was, what do we do now? Do we keep speaking about what's happening and draw attention to it, or do we not say anything and not provoke? And we were in touch with the people that were helping with Mazyar's imprisonment, and their feeling was, keep running the pieces, keep putting pressure out there. As small and incremental as that may be, it will go along with the petitions that people are signing, with the letters that people are writing. It was the beginning of a campaign.
And because you had just been there, and at that time, certainly, and in general, you don't usually send people abroad to do real things.
I really wish you hadn't given that away. That's
you'd send them to closer places.
Like right next to my desk.
But you kind of had skin in the game this time. And
well,
that
certainly
must have felt like it obliged you to do more.
Oh, no question.
So Mazyar is released from prison after 4 months.
Right.
His book comes out 2011. When do you decide, we should make a movie out of this?
Well, Mazyar and I, after he was released and he came on the show, he and I became friendly. You know, he's a documentary filmmaker and a journalist, so he'd be traveling a lot. And whenever we'd come through New York, we would meet for breakfast and just sort of hang out and talk about family and politics and steel-cut oatmeal, of which he is a fan. I've seen that man put down a lot of steel-cut oatmeal. And in that time, so he was writing his memoir, and perhaps it'll be a lesson to authoritarian regimes not to arrest journalists, because man, do they remember things and detail and absurdity. And he had asked me if I could help him maybe turn it into a film. And because I had never done that before, I said, of course I can. And so we began the process together, you know, two idiots with no Hollywood experience and no money.
But one of them a famous idiot.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. After a year of that, I became a little frustrated with the more glacial. You know, I'm very accustomed to television, which is an idiotic idea at 9, becomes a completed meal by 6, and you can forget about it. And I think I felt comfortable enough with the narrative. I felt comfortable enough with his sensibility. And so I thought, if we want to make this film as a part of current events, which I think it needed to be, as opposed to an artifact of history, that we were going to need to do this now, and I was going to have to do it.
and adapting your kind of creative mental metabolism to this long-term project, was that a big thing for you?
Yes. Because also, you know, what's very strange about doing the show is not only does your creative mind have more of a focus on kind of very digestible, ephemeral material, it's topical, but almost biologically, my clock is set to the Daily Show time. You have to be focused in the morning so that that good double espresso at 9 helps with that first editorial meeting. Then you're going to read the scripts at 11. Then you're going to do your rewrites at 1. Then around 4, when you go down for rehearsal, you're going to need another jolt of that. And so my body kind of goes through these adrenal, you know. Even the night we did our live show, we went on at 11, and I was screwed. I felt like I had jet lag.
You've been bred for this one thing.
It's really sad. There is I do believe there is a kind of Skinnerian process going on for me right now.
So you're in the Middle East.
Yes.
Filming a recreation of the filming of a Daily Show piece in the Middle East where you weren't actually present, with Jason Jones playing both Jason Jones and a Jason Jones character.
Yes. Well, let me be very clear. I auditioned a lot of Jason Joneses for the Jason Jones role.
But he made it.
It was real neck and neck. Him and Giamatti. I thought Giamatti did a tremendous Jones, but I went with Jones.
Let's go. So as a spy, I'm just trying to figure out why your country is so terrifying.
You know, the first thing to know about Iran is that it is not evil. Actually, Americans and Iranians have a lot of things in common more than they have differences.
What do I have in common with you?
What is the number one enemy of the United States?
Al-Qaeda.
Al-Qaeda is also the number one enemy of Iran. The Al-Qaeda members say that if you kill an Iranian or if you kill a Shiite, you go to heaven and you get 72 virgins.
Well, they won't be virgins for too long, huh? Right? You know what I'm saying? Upstairs. I'm sorry. No, that was great. That was really
sorry,
good.
Sorry.
No, it was great. It was great. I know. It's stupid. I'm an idiot.
That must have been just a meta-surreal moment to end all meta-surreal moments.
It was awfully interesting. I think more for Jason to recreate the moment in Tehran that he had created with Maziar there with Gael, was a very strange – and then, you know, there's a little brief moment of what you see on the television – in the piece, but then a little bit of that backstage, a little bit of the Larry Sanders of it all.
Yes.
That, you know, gives an audience a glimpse into what that process might be like.
Yeah. And it certainly, it is a terrific movie, but the scene in the movie that your millions of viewers will most covet as a artifact. It's not a comedy, but there are plenty of funny moments, at least that I laughed at. For instance, when at a certain point the colonel, Revolutionary Guard colonel, who is his handler and interrogator, says, call your wife and tell her to stop saying this bad stuff about the regime.
Right.
And then he says, oh, dial 9 first.
Well, it's an office. I mean, that was the idea of that, is that you have to remember, you know, we have this vision of, you know, you say to somebody, he was held in a prison in the Middle East, and you think, it's underground and there's rats. But no, it's an office.
Yeah.
It's very clean. It looks like a hospital. It's a civic institution. So they have their accounting people, and you have to dial 9 to get an outside line. And if you want to call long distance, I'm sure there's a code that they have to give you, because you're not allowed to just make long distance calls.
Yeah.
And what the hell you're doing? Lunch is 30 minutes. You can't have longer than that. It's an office. And you wanted to create that idea that these are not monsters. These are people trapped in as oppressive a system. Their goal is, I'm getting paid overtime here. I'm making some money. Maybe I'll get a chance to buy some land. I'd like to move up in the system because I'm tired of beating the crap out of people. I'd like to get more into that kind of intellectual spy stuff.
Yeah.
So you're creating all these various motivations and tensions, because it's very easy to dismiss this all as the one-dimensional dance between monsters and victims, but it's not.
Another comic motif is this Revolutionary Guard colonel being way too obsessed with sex and porn, which is true. You didn't make this up.
That is correct.
There is this moment, though, where Maziar starts saying, and New Jersey is this fantasy sexual wonderland. You can't imagine what happens there.
Sure.
You're You're from New Jersey. I don't remember that from the book.
I might have embellished certain things. Yeah. There were certain moments.
That was
I felt that at that point in the film, people needed a bit of a treat. But it was also, there was a reason for it. That was the beginning of Maziar's ability to see the vulnerabilities in his captors and begin to use those. It was his way of reclaiming his power and his humanity through this absurd, the interrogator becomes his muse. He begins to see, there are things I can do to change the power dynamic in this relationship in the way that you would do. You know, they always say, like, if you just rub an alligator's belly, everything will be fine. And you're like, yeah, but how do you get it to slow down enough to get to the belly? And it was his way of getting to the alligator's belly.
Do you see this in any way? Do you think of yourself and look at your career as, oh, this is my sort of Woody Allen going from comic genius to serious dramatist moment?
Yeah. Well, thank God that's what you're talking about with Woody Allen. I thought you were going somewhere else with that. I was like, I don't know. In terms of creating narrative in a visual medium, I didn't feel like the process was alien.
It's adjacent.
And the vocabulary is really the biggest difference. I wasn't fluent in the language of cinema. And so the real challenge there was to surround myself with people. I had to make very clear to them, and this is going to sound Rumsfeldian, unfortunately, but that I didn't know what I didn't know. This was the first time doing it. So they were going to, my support team, Bobby Bukowski, who was a cinematographer, Jerry Sullivan did production design, Phaedra Daedalo with costumes, Jay Rabinowitz with editing. I had to make sure that they understood, they had to raise flags early and often, that they would have to say to me, hey man, that's a really interesting idea, but you will destroy this production if we try and do it.
Was there an example of like, oh, I have this great idea, and suddenly they go,
Well, there was, one of the larger scenes that we had to do was recreating of Maziar's experience in front of the Green Mile, which was this very, very peaceful kind of silent march after the election to get their recount vote. When you're working on a limited budget, the idea of like, okay, we found a great location in Amman on an overpass, the street below it, that would be a great vantage point for Maziar to be filming from. And it's where he turns and pivots to see that a besieged base is under attack. A proper iteration of it is 15,000 people coming through. That was generally the vantage point that we had. It would have taken about 15,000 people to fill that space.
A lot of extras.
So we had enough money for, I think, 75. So we went on Facebook and I just did like a little video because I knew that I had been friendly with this Egyptian satirist named Bassem Yosef who'd been doing the show there. So I had
the John Stewart of Egypt.
Right, exactly. I had a slightly higher profile in the region than you might have thought previously. So I went on the Facebook and went, hey, we're doing this thing, just some ridiculous, like a radio contest. Come on down. And we got, 700 people to come out for, hugs and fun and dressed them up. We changed the vantage point. I put Bobby into the crowd to just give it a sense, a little bit more urgency, cut it into a little bit of AP footage, put Maziar up, and instead of having the murals of Khomeini and Khamenei.
Which might not have gone down well in Jordan.
Which probably wouldn't have gone down well, just had, some 10x20 green screens, and that's sort of how you...
Wow, you scrappy, nimble gorilla genius.
You basic cable idiot. That's how you do things... Running gun.
So you were a stand-up comedian for a decade. You've been a talk show host for 2 decades.
Right.
Is this the beginning of the decade or two or three of
director? What's funny about that is I still think of myself as a stand-up, and I still do it. And so I don't think of myself
really. So this great news figure thing feels like a fraud, and I'm not really that?
No, I never – I mean I never buy into any of it. It's – I consider it all part of the same thing I started out to do. The writing of the joke is the molecular form of it. It's the most basic. And then it's building blocks. So if to put it another way, it's all chicken. Some of it's chicken parmesan. Some of it's chicken cacciatore. Some of it's chicken nuggets. But it's all chicken.
Yeah. But are you going to
– keep making chicken?
Keep making chicken parmesan? Or these fancier chicken Kiev dishes?
I'll be honest with you. I really just like making chicken.
Yeah.
Really don't care.
You don't
how
care
comes.
What kind?
I don't really care how it comes.
Oh. As I was doing research for this, I saw suddenly on Google.
Wait, you do research for this?
A little.
You know, I'm going to learn a lot about how to do interviews from you.
It says 2012, there's this thing saying that, and The Daily Show was picked up for 3 years through mid-2015. Well, we're getting on toward mid-2015. Does that right. mean you have a choice to make in 9 months?
Oh, yeah. No, I think that's probably right, that I have a choice to make.
And?
Oh, I got to make it now?
And Secretary Clinton, are you going to run?
I don't know. And I think it's a bad thing to make a decision about your future while you're in the middle of something arduous. I have some thinking that I need to do.
Which is to say, there may be a Daily Show starring Jon Stewart in a year and maybe not.
Oh, sure. Yeah, I mean, but that's – you could have said the same thing 2 years ago. I've had to make that decision each time.
Yeah.
Because it isn't
now you've got this new chicken dish you've made very skillfully, though.
Well, but here's the other thing. There are a lot of times I think, I'd like to go back to that old chicken restaurant I used to work at. What I definitely know is this is not forever. It won't be a place that I stay in to the point where I feel like it's perfunctory. I can't do that.
Does making Rosewater give you so far more pleasure, the finished thing, than – is it the thing you're proudest of that you've done?
No, I don't think so. I think I'm proudest of process more than individual moments. I think what I'm proudest of is more the atmosphere and process that we set up for the show and the film. The creative process of it, the collaborative process of it. You know, I know the vagaries of the forms. Certain things will come out maybe better than what you expected. Certain things will disappoint you. There's always better ways to execute something. But process is everything. And I think I'm proudest of that.
Well, continue processing.
Yeah, baby.
Thank you, Jon Stewart.
Thank you.
And Rosewater.
Yes, sir.
Is in theaters everywhere.
What? I don't know about everywhere.
But it's in many theaters around the United States.
Yes, it's in some.
Great.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Dig it. Thank you, man.
Pleasure.
Pleasure.
Jon Stewart and I talked for more than a half hour, and you can hear that whole conversation at studio360.org.